paid
260 euros for a pair of Crocs, man.
Those shoes pretty much broke my foot.
It's only going downhill from here.
What up, guys? This is Josh.
And this is Fobs. And this is the Kickback Pod.
And we are back, the Kickback Pod, back once again, episode 67, JD Kicks, back again with my man Fobs. And this episode, we're excited about this episode because we're going to be talking about Nike, specifically some of the problems that the swoosh has been having over the last, let's say, 2 years or so. And the problems seem to be getting worse. So what we're going to do in this episode when we get into our big topic is we're going to go through some of the major problems that they have had, what's been causing their recent, let's say, downfall, and maybe some suggestions of how we think they could maybe do a quick turnaround, maybe not so quick turnaround, we'll see. But yeah, that's what we're going to be getting into later on in the episode. First of all, shout out to all our listeners. Thank you for staying with us every single time we drop. Thank you for those of you guys who send me DMs telling me that they are long-term listeners. Appreciate each and every one of you. But also, big time appreciation to my man Fobs. How you doing, my man?
What up, man? I mean, the sun is shining. This is a rarity in Berlin this time of year, so I'm feeling really good. It was really nice to wake up today to some sunshine. Had a nice date night yesterday as well. So I'm feeling very, very happy, very energized for the weekend. And I'm hoping that by the time those of you who are in Berlin are hearing this, the sun is still shining, because I feel like we all deserve a little bit of sunshine in our lives, especially since the last few weeks have been very gray, very wet. And, you know, not to hearken too much about the weather, but Berlin in winter is a different beast, man. So here goes out to all the Berliners, and hoping that we get some sunshine the next few days. What about you, man? How have you been?
I was actually earlier this week in Munich for a work trip, and I was there for 3 days, and all 3 days the sun was blasting. Like, the sun was shining spectacularly. It was so nice. And I was wondering, like, Is this like a lack of sun just a Berlin thing? Or because I always thought it was a German thing. It seems to be just a Berlin thing.
No, I think it's like a northern thing, right? So if you go to Hamburg, you'd probably get the same. It's that whole like coastal region as well. You're getting more like London-y kind of weather or UK weather than in the south. So yeah, okay. Munich, Freiburg, Stuttgart, Frankfurt, like, yeah, of course they also have gray winter days, but they've definitely got more sunny days than Berlin.
I see.
I don't know for real, like, for sure, but it would not surprise me to find out that Berlin had like the least sunny days in Germany, for example. You know, that statistic wouldn't surprise me. I don't know if it's true, but
I'm sure it's true. I mean, as living here now, it's already been 7 years. I can confirm, man. We don't need to look up the stats. I can confirm.
It has been confirmed.
Yeah. It's been a really interesting month for me. I signed up for this new, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's called ClassPass. It's basically like you get a bunch of credits for the month, and you get to try out like different fitness studios, like different kind of activities using your credits. And both me and my fiance signed up for it, and I've spent this month doing a lot of things for the first time that I've ever done before. For example, I went to a spin cycling class.
Oh, nice. How'd you like that?
Oh my god, man. It's a bit weird, man, cycling to like Taylor Swift, you know. but like, and also like, I was the only guy in the class out of like 20 people.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, I used to spin quite a lot. I canceled my urban sports. I like cycling. I'm a big fan of cycling for fitness too. I have a road bike, but I love spin, especially like the instructors who play like more heavy techno, because I feel like when the beat is like heavy and very clear, it's a lot easier to do spin. What I don't like about spin is the whole like hand movements that you have to do.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's what I hated about it.
It's so hard sometimes. Like how the hell are you supposed to stay on beat and do all this stupid like dancing? And I don't know if any of you listeners here do spin, or maybe there's some spin instructors here, but come on, please, let's quit it with these hand movements. Let's keep them simple. I don't mind that, but like the whole point of spinning is to hit the beat with your legs. And if you can't do that because of what you're doing up here, then sorry, but you're doing too much, man.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. I'm like, listen, if I wanted to do push-ups, I would just do push-ups. I don't need to do these like half push-ups on the spin bike. They're just ridiculous, man.
Bro, the crunches, they don't do anything. Like have you done the crunches on the bike where you're like literally you're just putting your head down and up. That's all that's happening.
Exactly. Exactly, man. I will say also the guy who was the fitness instructor, let's just say he did look the most in shape. So I'm like, man, like this isn't very motivating.
Oh man.
Yeah. So yeah, I did that. I did a pottery class. I've done, oh, nice. I did like a, some kind of like some type of yoga, vinyasa yoga or something like that. It's been a month full of like experimenting. Oh, and I was telling you before the pod, right after we record this pod, I'm going to go do Pilates for the first time. So it's been a month of just expanding my horizons, and I've been enjoying it. I'm grateful for my fiance for hooking me up to ClassPass. No, this is not a sponsored or anything like that. I've been enjoying trying out all these new activities.
Nice, man. I mean, it's nice to keep, you know, yourself on your toes as well when it comes to not just fitness, but in general. I think ClassPass is cool because it has more than just fitness. Like you said, pottery, yeah. Which are nice date ideas, I think. So, yeah, I'm excited. We should have like a check-in every episode now and be like, okay, what has JD been up to the past couple weeks on ClassPass? And then we can go through like what you've tried, get your review on things and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. No, I think our listeners are going to definitely decline big time if we do that. Okay, well, listen, guys, you guys are here to hear about the shoes, so we're going to get into that. First of all, shout out to our listener of the week. That is Adolfo Guerrero. Thank you very much for messaging me and telling me you are a long-term listener. So appreciate you, Adolfo. Let us get into what we've been wearing. So lately I've been really beating to death my Stone Island New Balances, the 991 V2. Like Fabian said, it's been super gloomy, super dark in Berlin, and that's why I love these shoes, man. It's super rare to get like a New Balance collab that has black as a base layer color. It's pretty rare. You usually get, you know, the more springy type of colors, the blues, the grays, but a black color New Balance, very rare. I love it. I think it's a fantastic shoe. The 991 V2 as well. Very, very comfortable, like way more comfortable than the 991s. And it's kind of on par comfort-wise with some of the other New Balance sneakers like the 992s and the 993s. So I've been really enjoying that. I will say, however, you know the knitting pattern on that mm-hmm. sneaker? I've only worn it maybe like 5 or 6 times now, and I've noticed the knitting pattern has been kind of coming loose in a lot of places. So quality control on that sneaker, not what I hoped for, but yeah, I still like the shoe, and nonetheless it's a great looking pair. Secondly, I've been also wearing a lot my Adidas BW Army shoe, which I copped recently from StockX. And also I have to give a big shout out to Hard Copy for also sending me a pair of their collab, which I haven't received yet, but I'm looking forward to receiving that one. But I've been wearing my just the standard colorway, the white with the gray, no, the tan suede and the gum bottom. And man, I love these shoes because I think they're the most versatile shoes that I own. It's literally a shoe that, because there's absolutely no branding on it, it just goes really, really well with pretty much anything I'm wearing. And it does have an ortholite insole as well, so I feel like they're just a lot more comfortable than the Sambas, than the Gazelles as well. So yeah, I've been really, really enjoying wearing the BW Armies. I dropped a whole video on YouTube about the shoe, talking about the entire history of the sneaker, how It was originally a shoe that was commissioned for the German army, and also everything that happened after that. So make sure you guys check out my review of the sneaker if you want to know more about the very interesting history about this shoe. Also, the next shoe that I've been wearing, this is not even a sneaker, but I have been making it a point this year to kind of expand my rotation a little bit and not only wear sneakers. So I have been wearing some loafers, and I have to give a shout out to Koyo New York, which is a brand that makes, it's most popular for their white sneakers, the Capris, which are a pretty similar looking shoe to Common Projects. But they were also nice enough to send me a pair of very nice, high quality Italian leather loafers, penny loafers, which became basically the first loafers that I own. So I've been just wearing them quite a lot. And let me say, guys, I understand why I was a sneaker guy, because loafers are like the most uncomfortable things. I don't know why people wear these shoes. They are, maybe it's because I need to beat them in a little bit more, but the leather just is killing me every time I wear them. They are the right size. It's not the sizing issue. It's just that they're just so uncomfortable, man. I don't get why people love loafers so much, but it's a transition period. I've been a sneaker guy for many years now, so it's a bit tough, my break-in time right now with my pair of loafers. So there's the loafers in the rotation. And lastly, I have been also, this is just mainly for the gym, I've been wearing the Salomon ACS Pro Advanced. Surprisingly, I find this a really, really good gym shoe, even though it's supposedly a hiking sneaker. They're a lot more comfortable to wear than the XT6s, than the XT4s. They fit me much better. And I get a lot of people at the gym asking me actually what those are, because they're just very interesting. They're very, the design is like really nothing else. And I just have been wearing my all over white pair. The Super Bowl was a few weeks ago. And if you guys wanted any more proof that Salomon is on the up and come up, look no further than the Super Bowl. They actually had a Super Bowl ad in the US, and it was one of the most talked about ads. So Salomon definitely on the come up, and we're actually going to be talking about Salomon a little bit later when we talk about problems that Nike is having. But Fobs, man, that was me talking for a long time, but let me hear what you have been rocking lately.
Yeah, I mean, you've been wearing quite a lot. I like that you have been wearing a lot of different things too, a bit of Salomon's, a bit of loafers, a bit of Adidas, a bit of New Balance, Stone Island.
The thing is, you know what? You're a loafers guy. I've seen you rock those. What is that brand you have with the pineapple loafers?
Filling
on
pieces,
them?
Yeah. So I was going to say,
those look fire, man.
Those filling pieces are actually, because I'm not like a leather shoe guy, but these loafers are actually very comfortable, surprisingly. So you obviously can't compare them to a Ultra Boost or, you know, whatever foam midsole shoe from a running company. But like, as it goes for loafers, these are very comfortable. So I would definitely, recommend filling pieces loafers, also because they've got fun, funky designs if you're looking for something that can be worn a little bit more casually. So the pineapple ones that I have, they didn't really need to be broken in. I wear them without socks, and I never have any like friction rubbing issues. So definitely, something worth looking at. But in terms of what I've been wearing recently, I've been trying to keep it varied as well, you know, taking inspiration from you. I've been wearing my Nike Lunar Roams quite a lot. Those are shoes that I feel look great, a little bit dirty as well. So I've been wearing them a lot to the playground. They're getting like a little bit sandy, a little bit muddy. They look like, you know, I've actually been on the moon. And they're just overall a really comfortable shoe, and I don't see them that often on the street. So it's kind of a nice one to wear, because you know that you're very unlikely to run into someone wearing the same shoes as you. Then I've also been wearing the Heisman Body Bape Stuzz that came out, the nice like beige cream colorway. Just kind of trying to keep it tonal a little bit. This is kind of embarrassing to admit, but like, I wore jeans for the first time in like over a year the other week. Like, recently I've just been wearing like my Needles tracksuit pants, my corduroy pants, you know, stuff that's like comfy, cozy, whatever. And then I was like, you know what? I need to like step up my pants game a little bit. So I dug out my jeans out the back of my closet. I had to like iron them because they're all wrinkled. And I feel like jeans, like a pair of nice black, deep black jeans, always look good with like an Air Force One type silhouette, which the BAPESA is, right? So I've been wearing that a lot in combination with the jeans. Also super nice shoe. Quality, not great. In my opinion, the leather is a little bit, yeah, weak, but they just look nice. That cream has been kind of hyped for a few years now as well, like that vintagey look. And then I have been wearing the HAL Studios Knockdown ASICS Gel 1130s from the Harry Suede Pack, the beige colorway. And that's just a super comfortable shoe. We've talked about it many, many times in this podcast. ASICS running shoes, retro running shoes, some of the best in the game. They've got the comfort, but they're not too springy. They're not too bouncy. They've got the stability as well. And when you've got a general release that looks like it could be a collaboration, such as the Harry Suede Pack, both colorways, beautiful. It's almost a no-brainer. So I've been going very like classic. You know, I think the Lunar Rome is a little bit more out there, but the Heisenbody BAPESTA and the ASICS Gel 1130 are very pared back designs, which I think I'm finding myself being drawn to more and more now that, you know, I still appreciate and love a nice colorful collaboration or even a general release, right? But when I'm like visualizing what I want to wear the next day or the day, like in the morning or whatever, when I'm sitting there, more and more I'm drawn to the pairs of shoes that I have that are very tonal, that are very pared back, laid back in terms of design and style. So yeah, let's see how this develops this year, because I also haven't had a lot of pickups this year. And we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, I think this year is going to be the year where I really focus on just like subtle shoes that maybe even some, you were talking about the BW Adidas, right? And then also the Hard Copy collaboration, which is a super nice shoe. I really like that. I really like what they've done with the squiggly red line, which they've taken from their logo. Beautiful, beautiful collaboration, and huge, huge shout out to Sam and Tim, the guys doing Hard Copy. But I saw at Vustor, I saw some Maison Margiela replicas, and those are like also based on the German army trainer, right? On the GAT. And they're like high quality Italian leather. Like they look so nice. And the only thing is they cost 520 euros. And I was like, oof, that is a bit steep.
They do always go on sale though. You can, if you just wait a little bit, you'll be able to get them like 300 around that price.
Exactly. So that's what I'm thinking. Maybe that's like a pair that I pick up this year because it really falls in line with that, like understated, like goes with most clothes and pants and stuff like that. So yeah, if you're listening to this, you know, keep an eye out. 2024 FOBS new style. I mean, I'm pretty sure I say this every year, but this year I mean it a little bit more than the previous year. So yeah, that's what I've been wearing. I spoke briefly about not having too many pickups, so I'm gonna jump straight into mine and then give you the floor because I know you have a lot more than I do. I've picked up a pair of Dickies pants, my first ever.
874s.
874s.
Oh, that's the classic. When people ask me on Instagram all the time, like, yo, what pants should I get? Like, if I had to make like a starter pack of pants, the first pant I would recommend is Dickies 874.
Yeah. I've never had a pair.
Super affordable and anyone can wear them.
I've never actually had a Dickies, but like everyone I know has either had a pair in their rotation or is currently wearing it the most out of all of their pants. And I saw that a lot of them were on sale at HHV, and I figured, they had like an extra 30% off sale as well. And I was like, oof, I might want to pull the trigger. So I think I paid like 40 something euros for mine, which was pretty decent.
Man, now you're going to make me buy one. Really? It's only 40 euros?
They don't have all colorways. I was going to get the black pair, but they didn't have those on sale. So then I ended up getting actually the like beige cream white pair because I thought I don't have a pair of white pants. It might be something different to put into the rotation. So yeah, let's see. They arrive actually today. So I'm very excited for that. And I will definitely be posting some Fitbits. But that's it. I didn't pick up any shoes. And looking at what's coming out in the next few weeks, it probably will stay that way for a while. But I want to know, What did you pick up?
Yeah, it's been pretty heavy on the pickups for me, I would say, since our last pod. So I'll start off with some of the recent ones. Picked up the Air Max DN, a brand new model from Nike. And the first pair was the collab with Supreme. I picked it up from the Supreme store in Berlin. Crazy is that the crazy thing about this pair was they sold out instantaneously the second they dropped on Supreme because there's only 4,000 pairs worldwide.
Oh, wow.
And the crazy thing is, I don't think anyone knew that they were actually dropping in store at Supreme. I walked into Supreme Berlin around 12 o'clock and managed to get my pair in my size. So that was really dope. Picked up the black colorway. Of course, there was only one colorway. And I dropped a whole review talking about this already, but this is by far the most comfortable Air Max sneaker ever made. It is incredible. It is so lightweight. The best part about the shoe is not those air bubbles at the bottom, it's the upper. The upper is made out of this like multi-layered knit material, which kind of feels like rubber. It kind of feels like the way I described it is it feels like you're putting on a scuba diving like wetsuit for your feet, because as soon as you slide your feet in, it just hugs your feet really nicely. It's very flexible. I was very, very impressed with this upper. And also the technology, it's called dynamic cushioning. It's the first time Nike has rolled out this technology, where basically there's four air tubes in the midsole. The two at the back have a higher amount of air pressure and the two at the front have a lower amount. And basically every step you take, the air kind of travels between these different airbags, giving you like a really smooth kind of feeling on feet. And it's not just marketing, guys. It actually feels great. It feels amazing on feet.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're reading the press release.
Yeah, no, because I just literally uploaded this video yesterday, so it's all fresh in my head, like everything I said in the video. But it's not just marketing. Like, it feels great on feet. I'm a big fan of this Air Max DN model, and I'm looking forward to some of the general release colorways, actually, even more so than the Supreme one. The thing I didn't like about the Supreme collab was the fact that Supreme is written in like size 95 font right all over the upper. It's a bit too loud for me, but I'm more excited for the general release pairs coming out on Air Max Day, which is March 26th. So yeah, that was the first pickup. Then I also picked up the Jound New Balance Gore-Tex, the 2002R in the charcoal gray colorway. We need to have a serious conversation about Jound, guys. They're taking minimalism too far. This is a pair where I'm like, man, if this was a general release, highly doubt these would sell out. Like, I'm pretty sure these would maybe even go on sale. But either way, I do like the fact that it is Gore-Tex. And a colorway like that, living where I live in one of the rainiest cities in the world, a sneaker like that is kind of perfect because it's a dark colorway, it's rainproof, waterproof. I'm not gonna worry about getting my feet wet. Previously, the only waterproof sneaker I owned was the Gore-Tex Solomon, and comparing the Gore-Tex Solomon to this Jound Gore-Tex 2002R, the comfort difference is like night and day. So if I wanted something a bit more comfortable to wear on those rainy days, then this is definitely the one I would go for. So I do like it for that purpose, but I'm not too impressed with the looks, I'll be honest. A couple of other pairs I picked up, now these were sent to me. So first, shout out to Lacoste for sending me a pair of the new sneaker that they released this year, which is the L003 LK24. Very, very impressed with this shoe. I actually really like the futuristic look of it. They recently had a collab on this model with High Snobiety, actually, which I originally asked Lacoste to send me that pair, but it was already sold out.
I forgot, like, that is my pickup. I received a pair from Lacoste. So at this point, shout out. Amadeus and I did an episode for Oshuan about this shoe, and dude, I have to back you up. Like, it's a very nice shoe. And I think Lacoste did a very nice job in like leaning into that like lifestyle running sphere, because it looks like this shoe could have existed before. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like it could be a retro. It doesn't look like a totally new design, because a lot of times these brands, they make these new designs to look like a certain trend, whether it's 2000s running or whatever. And it's painfully obvious that it's a modern day shoe that is supposed to look like a retro, whilst this one, it could fool people and be like, oh yeah, like Lacoste made this in the 90s or 2000s or something like that. So I think it's a great shoe, and the Heisman Body colorway is really nice too.
For sure. And I don't know if you tried them on feet. I was very impressed with just how comfy they are. They're really wide foot friendly, very, very comfortable pair of shoes. So definitely, if you guys are looking for an alternative brand to try out, I would say definitely check out those Lacoste sneakers. It's one of the best ones they've put out. Another pickup thanks to Size. Size recently just sent me their collab with Adidas on the SL72. Now these pairs will be officially releasing on March the 1st. They sent me the navy blue colorway with the it's got like a bit of a red trim to it. I'm a big fan of the SL72. It's just such a classic retro looking sneaker. And definitely, guys, be on the lookout for that collab dropping once again on March the 1st. And finally, I couldn't resist copying this because of the price. So Yeezy, Kanye, I don't think anyone can deny he is a man of the people, because the guy dropped every piece of clothing for $20. So, of course, in Europe, in fact, Europe, I also got the Yeezy Gap collection for $20. So I ended up buying two Yeezy Gap hoodies. Man, you can't go wrong for $20. The quality on those hoodies are also really, really exceptional. And then I picked up, of course, the Yeezy Pods, the socks, even though I think they look disgusting. Like I think it's like the worst looking thing I've ever seen. But I figured, since I do fly quite a lot, I do travel quite a lot, and I have a lot of travel coming up this year, the reason I got that was I'm like, I'm going to wear these on the plane because...
Nah, bro. No. No.
What do you mean, no?
What? I don't know. I mean...
Listen, man. You know when you fly on planes, your feet start to swell up. It gets really uncomfortable. I always end up taking my shoes off on flights and just have my socks kind of exposed. And I feel bad for whoever's sitting next to me. But now I'm going to be rocking these pods. It's like a sock and a shoe. The ventilation is going to be way better. Man, I'm going to be rocking them on the plane. I'll just walk up and down the aisles in my Yeezy pods.
Bro,
people are going to think, look at this guy walking around in his socks.
Then you might as well get the Balenciaga sock racers, right? Those sock shoes. Like if you want a pair of sock shoes.
Yeah, but those are like, what, $700, man? These are 20 bucks.
I definitely want to see you wear them, though, like on the street in Berlin, not just in the airplane.
No. That's never happening. That's the funniest thing is, like, there's been people on TikTok doing videos like how to style Yeezy pods. And like, if you read the comments, people are just like, this guy's literally showing us how to style black socks.
It's true, man. It's true. It's a wild shoe, but I'm a little bit surprised that you bought them, but...
They're terrible. I'm not defending them in any way. I literally just bought them thinking, okay, it's only 20 bucks and I'm going to wear them on flights. That was my thinking when I bought them.
All right, let's see.
We'll see, man. But what do you have any thoughts on this, by the way, on Yeezy basically making every clothing item on his site $20, kind of like putting up a middle finger really to the entire industry, saying trying to prove that you can actually sell stuff for a much lower price, which is something he's been talking about for a while.
I mean, isn't that what fast fashion kind of proves, and shine and stuff like that? I mean, and that's not even a good thing in my opinion. I think I don't really fuck with Kanye anymore and his products. I think I did go through Yeezy supply and look at everything that was up there. I didn't know that the Gap collaboration was up there. All I saw was like the Vultures merch and stuff like that. And for that, it makes sense because it's literally just merch. It's a hoodie, a plain t-shirt. It's a plain, or it's like a Vultures screen printed t-shirt. That's not expensive. The material is not expensive. If he's producing at scale, then the cost per item is probably what we're talking about, like maybe a couple euros, 3-4 euros per t-shirt. And that's maybe even high, right? Like depending on how many he's producing worldwide. So he's still got a nice margin on that. And you can go into Uniqlo and buy a $9 or €9 t-shirt. That's half the price. So I don't know. I don't see it as super revolutionary that he's selling stuff for cheap. And I think a lot of the stuff that he's selling for cheap is merch, and merch shouldn't be expensive, in my opinion. It, like, the last few years has been crazy, like the last 10 years of like merch prices exploding and like bands selling t-shirts for like $80 and stuff like that. And I get that they make money off of that and that their margins are higher there, but the quality of that kind of stuff is usually pretty trash. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's super revolutionary. I think it's kind of, you know, whatever. If somebody wants to spend $20 on it, they should. But I don't think that it's like the, you're not getting like amazing quality for $20. I think you're getting $20 quality, and that's fine. You know, a $20 t-shirt is fine enough to wear, or a hoodie or whatever. But yeah, not really for me.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested to find out, like whether or not this stuff is really, like you said, just band quality stuff. Because yeah, then okay, $20 makes sense. But typically, Yeezy brand has had better quality stuff ever since they've been around. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm looking forward to actually receiving those. Let's get into the biggest topic of what we're going to be discussing this episode, which is the fall of Nike and some of the problems they have been having. So there was a recent Business of Fashion article about Nike struggles, which you guys can definitely read very, very detailed on there about some of the issues they have been having. But essentially, the last time Nike posted their quarterly results, which was in December, the stock dropped 12% immediately after the results were announced, which was one of the biggest one-day drops ever in Nike's history. And it happened because Nike basically slashed their forecast for the upcoming year. They're expecting sales to be a lot lower than analysts had expected. And yeah, people, of course, Wall Street wasn't happy about that. The stock absolutely crashed. And when you compare Nike stock over the last couple of years with some of their competitors, such as the newer ones, like there's On, which is the Swiss-based brand. We also have the company Decker. Well, Decker is the parent company of Salomon. You compare it with these two brands, those stocks have been absolutely on a tear over the last couple of years. And Nike, meanwhile, has been dropping. We already know how popular ASICS has been over the last year. And then yesterday I saw this press release from New Balance showing just how crazy of a couple of years the brand has had. The sales were up 23% from 2022 to 2023. 63% of New Balance's customers over the last year were new customers buying for the first time. They had over 35% sales growth in Europe, 20% sales growth in the US. So they're firing on all cylinders. Meanwhile, Nike seems to be going the opposite direction. And there's definitely a lot of other issues going on with Nike, not just financial. Nike in the past have always been a company that has sponsored some of the top athletes in the world. And last year, Nike had the fewest amount of athletes show up on the podium, like track athletes show up on the podium compared to previous years. So that even that aspect has not been going so well. And of course, if you think about some of their recent, if we're looking at Nike basketball, they've kind of, you know, not been so great. We've had like a whole episode talking about how other brands like Adidas basketball have been really stepping up in terms of not just the design of the shoes, but also the marketing behind it. If we look at the marketing of the Anthony Edwards, the AE1, that ad was almost like an old school Nike ad. It was like straight out of the 90s, Anthony Edwards looking into a duffel bag of shoes, taking them out one by one, saying they were all trash until he got to his pair. And the marketing for that shoe has been so good that every colorway so far has instantly sold out. And we can't say that about any really like Nike basketball sneaker in quite a long time, besides the Kobe's, of course. And yeah, like that edge that Nike seemed to have when it comes to their marketing has also kind of tailed off, you could say, over the last few years. If you remember during the Jordan era, they had some absolutely iconic TV commercials. They had people talking for weeks about these commercials, but it's been a while since we've seen that level of, let's say, noteworthy or the type of marketing that has people talking in the forums online. But that's been kind of lacking as well. And that's basically been a very quick summary of some of their issues that they've had over the last year. And I was talking earlier about just their stock price going down and other company stock prices going up, like Deckers, which owns Hoka as well as Salomon. What are some of the issues that we think have been causing this? So when we were preparing this episode, we did list out a bunch of issues that we think could be the cause of this, but I've been talking for quite a while, so I'll let you maybe kickstart, Fobs. Like, what are some of the main issues you think that has caused this recent, let's say, decline of the swoosh over the last couple of years?
I mean, like you said, there's a lot of them, or several big factors. I want to go back real quick to what you said about the Anthony Edwards rollout. And I think that has been such a good rollout. Not only is the product on point, but like you said, the marketing behind is amazing. And not just the actual ads and the campaign, but also the interaction and engagement online. So like Anthony Edwards is like constantly tweeting and like tweeted KD, like, "Yo, KD, wear my shoes," right? And then KD was like, "Nah, fuck that," right? So even like that kind of back and forth puts Anthony Edwards' signature sneaker at the forefront of people's minds when they're scrolling Twitter. It's honestly, it's so genius how they've done it, how they've tapped into this player as well, who from his play style is very Michael Jordan-esque. And I don't want to say that he's as good or will ever be as good as Michael Jordan, because that's a high bar. But when you watch like how he plays, he's explosive. He can dunk the ball. His layups, his like, I don't even know what you call them, but like, you know, the like
his fadeaways,
his like fake layups where he's like clutch, you know, like he's doing like the double clutch and then laying it off the glass and in. I think there was a compilation on Reddit or Instagram or wherever where they did like a side by side of like him doing a fadeaway, him doing a layup, him doing a dunk, and Michael Jordan doing it as well. And it was just so similar. He's got the same kind of body type, you know, he's built like him, he's explosive, he's a good shooter. So I think they're onto something here. And then, you know, the James Harden shoe has been great. A lot of the Adidas shoes have been really, really cool. They've got this very cool aesthetic going on. They've got the crazy infinity, the mad infinity, which are the, you know, the old Kobes that they've rejigged and we've talked about several times on the pod and on social. Everything is going right for them. And That is happening in basketball. And then you've got running, as you said. You've got On, you've got New Balance, you've got Hoka, you've got Saucony, you've got Brooks, you've got Adidas. You know, Adidas is sponsoring some of the best runners as well in the world. I think there were a couple of record-breaking marathons in the women's, and then the half marathon and then 10K, all wearing Adidas, right? So you have to kind of look at this holistically. And Nike, I feel, is losing ground. They're still the biggest brand. There's no question about it in terms of pure numbers, pure revenue, but they've plateaued. And could that be because they're just so big? It's, you know, the bigger you get, the harder it is to keep growing at the same pace. And sure, like they're plateauing, but they're still projected to grow by 1%, which is not a lot, but it's still, they're still growing. They're just not growing at 10, 12, 15%. Rates, which is obviously always the target, right? And it's a lot easier for the Salomons, for the Hokas, for the Sauconys to grow quicker because they're smaller. They have less market cap. They're less saturated. They are maybe a little bit more agile, a little bit more focused. And from the reports that I've been reading, it seems that a lot of this started with the new CEO who took over in 2020, Donahue. And his strategy was to centralize a lot of things. Nike has had several rounds of layoffs in the last few years. letting a lot of talented people go. A lot of talented high-level execs have left the company and gone to other brands, which of course then strengthens those brands further whilst weakening Nike at the same time. So you've got like an exodus of talent in a way. And then Donahue has kind of structured the company a little bit differently. He's made a lot of the decisions very centralized. A lot of the strategic decisions for big markets and big cities are coming out of Beaverton, Oregon, which means that they are setting the strategy. And I don't know if this is 100% the case, but from what I've read, apparently a lot of the local campaigns and the local strategies are still being decided by Beaverton for Paris, for Berlin, for London, rather than what it was previously, which is investing in teams on the ground there and having a creative strategist there or a art director, a creative narrative manager and stuff like that in those cities, who had full control over how they were presenting Nike to their audience, because they know their audience best, right? Someone from London who grew up there, who wears Nike, who works for Nike, knows what the youth culture in London wants better than someone who's sitting in Beaverton. But they've centralized all of this decision-making to Beaverton. They've also centralized the decision-making for a lot of these high-level big sports like running and basketball. Previously, the executives of basketball, the head of basketball, the GM of running, would decide how their category was run, what their strategy was, what kind of products, what kind of innovation, what their focus would be. But now that has all been centralized to Beaverton, which means that they have to decide, and then that trickles down. And I think that means that Nike maybe moves a lot slower strategically than in previous years. And also, you have people who might not be the experts in those categories making decisions that experts should be making. So I think that is like from a pure like business and like human resources point of view, that's like a big thing that just slowed them down a little bit. And then, you know, it's been the lack of innovation and the fact that, you know, when Nike created the carbon fiber plate running shoe in whatever it was, 2018, 2019, it was so good that they won 17 out of 21 gold medals, right, in track and field. Now they've only won 10 out of 22 or whatever it was, right? So it means that other brands have caught up. Other brands have been able to innovate in the same way whilst Nike hasn't continued to push the boundaries and push the envelope. Maybe it's just like technologically not possible at the moment, and this carbon fiber was such a huge jump and they made it first and that was great, but it was just natural that everybody would catch up. Maybe that would have happened regardless. It's similar to maybe F1 with the regulation changes, for anyone who's familiar, right? You've got regulation changes and one team will nail the regulation changes and have an amazing car. Red Bull now, Mercedes before, right? And for the entire time, everyone else is playing catch up until the regulations are basically reset and then there's another jump. And sometimes a totally different team nails it and then is automatically the best team for the next 6 years or 7 years or whatever. And maybe that was the case with running, where Nike just nailed this carbon fiber thing. Everyone is caught up. And now there might be some innovation coming through the pipeline that we don't know about, but maybe it's coming from New Balance. Maybe it's coming from Brooks. Maybe it's coming from Adidas again. Adidas had that with Boost and then they stagnated a little bit as well. So it isn't new that big brands can sometimes stagnate. We've seen it with Adidas. Adidas is now catching up a little bit due to the court classics and all of that kind of stuff, the Sambas, the Gazelles. Nike had the Dunk. They had the Air Force One. They had Virgil, rest in peace. And now they've stagnated a little bit. Adidas had Yeezy and Kanye and Pharrell in the beginning as well. That's kind of gone away a little bit. But now they've got the basketball, they've got the court classics, they've got Jerry Lorenzo. So there's a lot of things that are happening here. And then again, like you said, the smaller brands that are a little bit more agile, that are hungry, that are the underdogs. You know, Nike used to be the underdog back in the 70s, the 60s, 70s, 80s. They no longer are. And sometimes it's easier to be the underdog because you can do things that are different, that are groundbreaking, that maybe raise a bit of eyebrows, get you some more coverage on social media and within the culture, whereas kind of the old dog, the big dog, needs to really play by the rules and does the things that they've always done rather than innovating, because you kind of, yeah, you rest on your laurels a little bit. So I think to summarize here, it's a mixture of kind of lack of innovation, lack of focus on performance and focusing too hard on maybe the Dunk and retro like Air Force Ones and stuff like that. Then, of course, the huge surge in competition is another one. The saturated market just for Nike, they've stopped growing in the US and China, which is a big deal. Those are like the two big focus markets for them, whilst other brands are maybe growing there at a much larger pace. And then, yeah, just the strategic direction that they've taken internally in terms of centralizing things maybe wasn't the best decision in the long term. But again, it's early days. Who knows what happens in the next few years? But I think looking forward, and let me know what you feel about this, but I think that we could be seeing a shakeup. It's going to take a long time for Nike not to be number one anymore just because they're so big. But in terms of cultural relevance, we're already seeing that. ASICS, New Balance, those have been brands of the year for the past years. Adidas. And Nike, the last time Nike was brand of the year was what, 2020, 2021 with the Dunk? And since then, they haven't been. And I think that will continue, that we will have more and more other brands be more culturally relevant than Nike until they get their shit together. And it's difficult for such a big company. We're talking here not just about a brand, but a huge corporation with thousands and thousands of employees. It's very hard to kind of change course and steer the ship in a different direction. Sometimes it takes years. So I think it could take a while before they recover.
Yeah, you just raised a lot of very, very good points. So going back to what you said about Nike has been for a while now the biggest dog in the market. And when you're at the top, there's only really one place to go, and that is go down. And they have started to lose some of the market share. People have just been much more willing to explore different sneaker brands. Also with current trends, with like the whole Y2K trend, you know, people have been moving towards models like ASICS, models like New Balance, and Nike has suffered as a result. But if you think about, you know, what took Nike to that number one spot over the last, let's say, couple of decades, it was the innovation, right? It was that Air Max technology of the 80s and 90s. It was, you know, of course, like their amazing like run they had with Jordan on all the retros. But when I think about like the last innovation they've had that was really widely adopted mainstream, I'm thinking like, what was it? Maybe the Flyknit? Maybe Flyknit technology, right? From like the 2010s, like that was
Lunar Lawn as well in the early 2010s. But since then, you're right. They've tried different iterations of Nike Air, right? With the Scorpion, the VaporMax, now this Dynamic Air. But it remains to be seen whether it really grips the market. And I suspect, like, as cool as you think the Dynamic Air is, and maybe it is a great product, but it's just the Air Max. Like, it feels like a lot of Nike silhouettes, a lot of Nike series or like product types are popular as retros, and anything new, it's difficult. Like, I wouldn't call the VaporMax a classic, you know? I wouldn't.
No.
And so I think they've tried and they've done cool stuff, right? But it just hasn't really translated to creating new product that really changes the landscape and the cultural thinking. And this is true for a lot of brands. They're leaning so heavily on retro that a lot of the new stuff is, just, you know, either it's pure performance or it's just like new lifestyle that doesn't really work. And I think making something new in lifestyle is very hard just because of how we are as people and consumer behavior. We want storytelling. We want something we can relate to. And nostalgia plays a big factor in buying things, right? A lot of people would be like, oh, I remember my first shoe was the Nike Cortez or something, right? And so that's the reason they get it. And that's the reason why these shoes are so popular and have endured to this day. But iterating on that and making something new that's an instant classic is difficult.
I had a very interesting comment left on one of my recent videos, which really made me think a lot about this topic. And the commenter basically said that Nike fans and Jordan fans are rather very different than fans of other brands because they love retros and they really don't like when Nike tries to change those retros in any way, such as fans of the Air Max who haven't really gravitated towards the newer Air Max models. Similarly with Jordan brand, you know, people just love the retros. They don't really like any of the new Jordan models, Whereas fans of other brands like, you know, New Balance and Asics, they seem to embrace newer stuff that the brand does a lot more. For example, New Balance has in the last, I think New Balance has been the best at this, honestly, over the last few years. They've put out the 9060s, which have become an absolute hit, like probably one of the highest selling shoes now for the brand, which is very difficult to do, like you said, in the lifestyle category. Also, Asics, actually, you know, Asics hasn't really put out a bunch of new models, but I just feel like, when Nike ever tries to do new stuff, people are just not as receptive to it. Maybe because, like you said, they have this whole nostalgia to do with Nike. They have a much longer history with Nike, so they just have like different type of feeling to the brand. So I guess this is a very difficult question to answer, but how much of this lack of innovation is not so much on the brand, but rather on the consumer's perception of Nike and their attachment to just like their personal history with the brand? Because, you know, like you said, they have put out a lot of newer models over the last years, like the VaporMax, like the newer stuff, like the DN, the Air Max DN, which people don't seem to like from the comments I've been reading, and maybe not so willing to try it. But yeah, I mean, how much of this is on the consumer?
I think, yeah, of course, a lot of the brands are governed by consumer behavior. They want to make sure that they're creating things that the consumer wants. And if they have the feeling that the consumer will react badly to something, they won't do it. But then they wouldn't have done the VaporMax. They wouldn't have made the Nike Scorpion, right? So they're still trying to make new things. It just hasn't been maybe the right kind of new thing. So I don't know. I think, sure, the consumer should be open a little bit more, but I feel like just objectively too, the product could have been better.
Yeah, right. Well, also one quick point I wanted to bring up was, if you think about the big names that they've signed to, you know, collab with to really be a spokesperson for their models, it has started to, you know, maybe tire out some consumers. Like, I feel that way really about the whole Travis Scott line right now. There's just not been much going on there. Yeah, we're kind of tired of seeing reverse swooshes. On the basketball side, some of the big names that they signed, those people had some off the court issues, you know, like let's be honest, like the whole Ja Morant thing has really, really not worked out for them. And also
Kyrie Irving,
I think they got too political as well with the whole Kyrie thing, which turned off a lot of fans. They recently tried to sign, they were very successful in signing Kai Cenat, which was the first time a sneaker brand has partnered with a streamer on a shoe, which I think is cool because no other company has really done that. And they're, you know, trying to definitely appeal to the younger audience there. So maybe they're making some progress with their collaborators. But I feel like there's just been a lack of really notable names trying to push the brand forward as well.
Yeah, actually, so I think Adidas has done a streamer before. I guess it depends on what your definition of a streamer is, but they had a huge like series of collaborations with Ninja.
Right, that's true.
Which the product was pretty trash. It was just like Ultra Boost in a crazy colorway, like his hair or something like that. Like pretty bad. But that was, I think, the days where Adidas didn't really know what they were doing. But yeah, I think it's a good point. Like when you're stagnating, you need to try new things. You need to see what hasn't really been done, at least internally, or what maybe hasn't been done successfully by your competitors and see if you can do better. And the Kai Cenat thing, maybe it pays off, right? The way that, you know, young people are, I guess, engaging with creators, with content creators, like who their heroes are and their media consumption has changed, obviously, generation to generation. And I think it's worth exploring, like, who are the new influencers? Who are the new creatives that people look up to and want to be like? Who can we bring on board that will bring our company and our product forward? And So I think that's a good move on Nike's part. Let's see if it pays off. But yeah, like I said, overall, I think it will get worse before it gets better for Nike. And that's not to say that Nike won't have hits, right? They will have great shoes. They will have great collaborations. They still have a great roster of collaborators on the lifestyle side. They still have great athletes like LeBron James, KD, etc. Giannis in basketball. They've obviously got like a great like tennis players, runners, etc. But it's getting harder. And I think that's a good thing for consumers. The more competition there is, the better the product is across all brands, right? And that's kind of what we want. So I'm here for it, man. And I have no doubt that Nike will still be the biggest company or the biggest sportswear company in the world over the next few years. But they're not going to, you know, sweep the board with W's. There might be a couple of L's in there. And that's okay, because like I said, competition is good for the industry. It's good for the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's use that to wrap up this segment. Hope you guys enjoyed that big topic for this week. As usual, we are going to end off with our upcoming drops for the next couple of weeks. And I'll be honest, guys, it's a good time to save your money, because there's just not a whole lot dropping in the next couple of weeks, at least. On February the 29th, we'll have the return of the iconic eggplant colorway of the Foamposites. So Foamposite fans out there, a lot of you guys think this is the best colorway ever. So definitely circle that date on the calendar. On March the 1st, the Adidas Originals Bali, which is this, wait, I need to look this up. Is this like a newer model or?
No, oh, no,
it's a retro model. I just haven't
worn
it before.
It's one of Adidas's many court classic retro models. You know, they've got the Bali, the Hamburg, the Handball, the Spezial, the Samba, the Gazelle, and it goes in that direction. It's a nice suede shoe. If somebody's looking for something that's not a Samba or not a Gazelle, take a look at it. It's pretty nice.
That will be dropping on March the 1st. Actually, also on March the 1st, it's the first release of the Asics and Hidden New York Gel NYC, which that's nice. The date that they have announced on their Instagram. But let's see if there's it's just going to be hidden.com a website release or a wider Asics release. Not sure about that, but that's looking like one of the most anticipated sneakers of the year. But I'm sure they will be pretty much impossible to get. So we got to tell you guys about it anyways. And lastly, we have another colorway of the Zoom Vomero 5 dropping on March the 8th. This is the black and blue gaze. So there's been a lot of really nice colorways dropping recently of the Vomero 5s. Also, some very nice colorways from last year have restocked. So make sure you guys look for them, such as the oatmeal pair, which I've been wearing quite a lot. That restock. Also the photon, not the photon dust, the one with the chrome swoosh on it, which I really liked. That restocked in a couple of stores as well, so keep on the lookout for those. And yeah, that's about it. There's not a whole lot else releasing, so that's how we're gonna end this episode. I wanted to give another shout out to Fobs. Thanks again for podding. As usual, we continue to do this for all you guys. Thank you for listening, and looking forward to the next episode already. And until then, peace.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Another good episode in the book. Shout out JD, shout out everyone, and see you guys next time.
Peace.